Hab gehört. Der Podcast der Herzog-August-Bibliothek.
Hi and welcome to Hab gehört, the podcast of the Herzog-August-Bibliothek, the HAB. My name is Marie Adler, and as you may have noticed by now, this episode is going to be in English, since our guest today is the wonderful book artist Clifton Meador. Wenn Sie, liebe ZuhörerInnen, lieber auf Deutsch herausfinden möchten, was Clifton uns heute erzählt, finden Sie das übersetzte Transkript des Interviews auf unserem Blog. Den Link dazu stellen wir in den Shownotes bereit. Clifton Meador studied photography at the Rhode Island School of Design and Book Arts at Purchase College in New York. From 2014 to 2019, he served as chair of the art department at Appalachian State University, where he is now a professor in the graphic designs and graphic communications management programs. Now, you may ask, what has the Herzog August Library to do with all that? The answer is, Clifton Meador has been awarded this year's Artist Book Prize of the Herzog August Bibliothek Wurfbüttel and the Kurt Mast Jägermeister Foundation. In the award-winning project, Meador takes the 30 Years' War as the starting point for an artistic examination of the consequences of war up to the present day. Let's dive into what that means. Hi, Clifton. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very happy to have you here today. Congratulations on winning the Artist Book Prize. Can you give us a short overview of your project and how you came up with the idea to use the 30 Years War as a starting point?
That's a big, long question. So a lot of my recent work has been using archives as a basis to create artistic work. I want to be really clear, I'm not a scholar. So my approach to work, creating work, is to find archival materials that I think have some kind of resonance with an idea I have, and then use those as a basis for creative production.
How can I imagine resonance? What does that feel like?
Something that creates a connection in my mind. So I think scholars use historical information to connect ideas.
Yeah.
And they find connections in these historical things. I do something similar, but it's without the rigor that scholars bring to their work. It's more about expression and about trying to create a mood, a feeling, or some communication about a particular idea.
I'm still trying to get a very clear picture of that. So you look at the source, you read something, and then that resonance comes about. And then what does the creative process look like? What happens next?
Oh, that's a hard thing to describe, because I do believe in intuition. And I think intuition operates for everybody, even people doing scientific work.
True.
Taming intuition, though, is the important part, where you have to figure out a way to take your intuitive conclusion and then give it some kind of rigor or some kind of structure around that idea. So this idea of resonance for me is a recognition. So I look at these maybe old images and I have some creative idea, and then it seems like it tells the story or is part of the narrative arc I'm interested in creating. I wish I could just show you some of these images. It's
me too.
Easier to show than tell.
So we're in a podcast.
Yes,
that won't
I know.
Happen. You arrived here in Wolfenbüttel almost 3 weeks ago now. How have you been utilizing your stay here to advance your project? Yeah, I know the aim is to work with the sources, but what does that mean to you specifically? What does a typical day for you at the HAB look like these days?
Well, I started by going through the finding aids. I asked some of the librarians if there were ways to find an overview of the material held. I'm specifically interested in visual representation of early modern war. That's where I started with this. So there's some great books put together by the library. There's a multi-volume thing called The Harms, which is a catalog of German prints from the 17th century mostly. And that's the period I'm focusing on because I'm interested in the 30 Years' War as an example of maybe the first mediated war, the first war that was reported extensively in media.
How? How was it reported in pictures or in
mostly in pictures. These single sheet prints would have a copperplate engraving and then text printed around it. And as part of my project, I was interested in looking at how those copperplate engravings were also printed with letterpress. So those are two different printing media used at the same time. So that was an interesting question that required me to see the physical object for me to understand it as a material object. But to get back to the earlier part of your question,
yes,
I found finding aids that had indexes of all the prints held by HAB. And then I went through, and some of them have been digitized, but most of them have not been digitized. So then I filled out request forms, and I requested the ones that haven't been digitized. And so then I worked mostly in the Augusta at first, and they'd bring me a box full of prints, and I worked with only 10 at a time. That was as many as I could digest. And then I photographed them, and they allowed me to photograph them. So I photographed details. I looked at how they were printed. There was a kind of investigation that was based on looking.
Okay. And what do you mean by that's the most you can digest? What happens after 10?
My mind goes kind of into a fog.
I see.
It's a lot to look at.
Yeah.
I'm specifically interested in how artists recorded tiny details.
Mm-hmm.
So the digitized prints that you can see online give you a good sense of what the image is about.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an allegory, you can see the allegory. If it's a reporting image, you can see that. But what it doesn't do such a good job at is like the tiny details that artists would sneak in around the edges. And so one of my research questions was, did artists try to sneak in small narratives into these bigger narratives?
Can you give us an example of what that looks like? What kind of tiny details would that be?
So I was just looking at something yesterday, and it's a battle scene.
Mm-hmm.
But at the edges, you can see people going about everyday life. And so that's what I was interested in, is like, how did they include that? Why did they include that? And what does that look like?
I see. Do you have already answers to those questions, or that's your work?
Sadly, no.
Okay, I see. How do you plan to incorporate the historical holdings into your artist book?
It will be the nucleus of what I do. Mm-hmm. I've also done some photography, my own photography of some former battle scenes of battles that are represented in these copper plate engravings. So it'll be a combination of contemporary photography and the photography of these copper plate etchings, and then maybe some other third element as yet undetermined.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Do you have specific works or documents that you could name now that you'll work with?
Well, that's a little hard. There's an amazing work, the Theatrum Europaeum,
yeah,
which is a kind of illustrated newspaper from the 17th century that has really wonderful copperplate engravings. And this guy, Miriam, was a really good artist, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Underrecognized, perhaps, outside of this specific field. But the reporting engravings he made have a very specific voice, and it reminds me of graphic novels of the 20th century.
Oh.
I think it participates in a visual tradition that goes all the way up to now.
Are there particular historical figures or events from the 30 Years' War that you are planning to focus on in your book?
I think that's getting a little ahead of what I'm doing, but there is an answer. So I got interested in the idea that the King of Sweden was killed in a battle.
Oh.
So Gustavus Adolphus was killed at the Battle of Lützen, which is near Leipzig. And I went there 2 weeks ago and photographed the battlefield. And there's a kind of monument, a rock, that they placed where his body was found. And behind it, a church built much later, actually. And they're now building a museum next door, which is not finished yet. But so the battlefield is just, it's a big farm field. And there's been battlefield archaeology done at this site, and I think the ground is full of bullets.
Oh, okay.
There were 9,000 people at least killed during this battle, which is a one-day battle, which also killed this king. So that, to me, feels like maybe a spot to create focus around this idea. So that was 1632 in November.
So the King of Sweden is going to be part of your book?
Perhaps. He had, you know, a lot to do with the war.
As you pointed out in your project sketch, the 30 Years' War had far-reaching consequences for Europe's political, religious, and social landscape. How will these themes be reflected in your artist book?
Well, I'm still doing that reading, so I can't. Mm-hmm. It's hard to talk about that. But one of the effects of it, I think, was the standing armies came into existence after this. And then, of course, the disposition of Europe was affected by the Peace of Westphalia. So it formed political shapes that had long-running consequences. I don't know how much of that will be part of the book exactly.
But it's part of the thought process that then leads to the finish.
Exactly,
book, right? Okay.
Yeah. And the whole thing really started for me thinking about a huge land war in Europe. So the war in Ukraine is the largest land war in Europe in a long time.
Yeah.
And it's being fought just like World War I was fought. There are trenches, artillery barrages, waves of people being forced into, you know, death, really.
Yeah.
And there was something about the kind of endlessness of war that's a theme in that war that made me start thinking about the 30 Years' War and wondering what that was like.
I see. You also mentioned the relevance of historical narratives for today's experiences and narratives, possibly. Can you elaborate on that connection again? I see you connect the war in Ukraine with the 30 Years' War. Where does the narrative come in?
Well, that's still something I'm trying to figure out right now. That's exactly one of the things I'm wondering about. But this idea that there's a cycle of history, that things repeat themselves, and that we can't seem to move away from war is definitely a motivating impulse for me. I can't understand why we're still having wars like this.
Right.
It just seems unbelievable.
Yes.
So that's part of the narrative, is try to get that idea into better shape.
I see. Getting it into better shape. You also mentioned the possibility for artists, like yourself probably, to introduce other stories alongside the dominant narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that practically, or how do you do that?
Well, the challenge with this project is to turn it into a story, to make some kind of a shape to it that makes it easy for somebody to get into it, to immerse themselves in it. So maybe this story, the King of Sweden, he's a very unusual character, I think. The fact that he died on the battlefield. How many kings have died on the battlefield in the past 400 years? Not many, I don't think.
That's not the ones that die in the wars.
Yeah, usually they stand safely at a distance.
Okay. And what challenges do you see in translating historical documents like the ones you're working with in our reading rooms and the images into a contemporary artist book that you do in 2024?
Well, there'll be technical challenges. I'm interested maybe in trying to do part of this in intaglio, since these prints are intaglio themselves. It's not a medium I work in very often.
Please explain.
So that's an engraving or etching or photogravure. These are all processes that are different than relief printing.
Okay.
Do you want me to go into more detail?
Yes, please. I was about to ask you on your techniques and the material you're working with. So let's dive into that.
Okay. So most of my work starts with photography. I was trained as a photographer as an undergraduate, and I got interested in how sequences of photographs create a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make groups of photographs into an artistic work. And I had a teacher who said, and this is sort of a joke, he said, you know, there's a technology for that. It's called a book.
Okay.
So I started making books as a way to create a convenient structure for a series of photographs. So as part of that, then, I learned certain kinds of printing.
Wait, is that how you became a book artist?
It is. That's exactly.
Nice. Okay.
And I teach graphic design. But I backed into it from this very strange backdoor process of being a photographer, wanting to make books, and then realizing that if you put a word into a book, there's a whole discipline around that. Then thinking about the space in a book, all of that is part of graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
So I backed into it that way. So I had to learn printing processes, and offset lithography was, at the time, probably the best way to reproduce a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a job basically in a print shop working.
Okay.
And I learned that, and then the rest of it followed from that.
And which techniques will you use in your book now? You already mentioned one. Maybe you can describe that in more detail.
Offset lithography?
Yes, please.
It's a lithography is a planigraphic printing process, meaning there's not a raised surface that receives ink. There are spots on a printing plate that are either like grease or like water.
Okay.
So you wet the plate first, and then you pass an ink roller over that, and the ink only sticks to the spots that like grease.
Okay.
It's rather magical, actually.
It does sound magical.
And it was invented in the early part of the 19th century, maybe the late 18th century, by Sinnefelder, who's a German living near Offenbach, I think.
Okay.
And it was the early uses of lithography were things like music printing, because that was much easier to do without metal type. Illustrations. It's an autographic process, meaning it was first printed from stones, lithographic stones, that like have this quality of liking water or liking grease.
Oh, I see.
And it has a tooth to it, so you can draw on it with a kind of crayon or a pencil.
Uh-huh.
And the mark the artist makes on the stone is directly translated to print.
Wow.
So it has a kind of freshness and immediacy that many media don't have. For example, these copper plate engravings I'm looking at now are laborious. Somebody has to sit there with a burin, push it into a piece of copper, make tiny grooves in the copper, and it takes a lot of hours. Whereas in a lithograph, you can just draw directly on the stone.
I see. Oh, I wish we could already see the book that is not there yet, right?
But I'm interested in that idea too.
Yeah. You'll start doing the printing process when you're back in America, right?
So I work I have a digital workflow, so I'll have to build all the files first.
I see.
So I've already started on that part. I've been doing little experiments in the digital realm to see different kinds of visual languages I might use. But I'll have to go back, by the time, when I get back to America, I'll start making tests to see what I think is appropriate for this project.
Okay, but everything happens at the same time. It's not first looking at the sources, studying or reading everything, and then getting into that manual work. It's happening on parallel?
Yeah, so I had a show at a gallery 2 years ago that was called Thinking Through Printing, and that's pretty much exactly what I do is I start printing and thinking about how that language works with the ideas I have.
So you already see everything in your head in print?
Well, no.
No, okay.
I have to print it to see it.
I see.
I do believe the material object still has a kind of power in the world. And the digital realm is incredibly useful for what I do, but it's not the experience I want to make.
That's good news for a library.
Yes.
With historical holdings.
Though libraries are mostly digital now.
Yeah, that's true. And I think we can't avoid that, and we don't want to, but still we also keep the books. And
I'm incredibly grateful
yes.
for this opportunity.
Right. How do you balance between historical accuracy and artistic freedom in your project?
That's a difficult question because, as I said, I'm not a scholar. So I'm not constrained by rules of scholarly practice. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in creating expressions. So I sometimes am a little fast and loose with actual historical accuracy in the interest of telling a story. And maybe I should put a warning on the work I make. But I will try to not tell a lie.
Right.
But it's sometimes with visual material you create alternate readings that you might not be aware of at first. And those might create an impression that's not, strictly speaking, historically accurate.
What personal insights or changes do you hope to gain from working on this book specifically? Or any, if any?
Well, this one, I'm really horrified by war.
Yeah.
And I think the insanity of war is inexplicable to me. And looking at the way this war was reported from, 1618 to 1648 is really interesting to me. And I can see already, and I haven't finished this work at all, a kind of evolution of how they're telling the story in pictures. Mm-hmm. From a kind of nobility to war to something more awful. And there's a series of prints by a French artist, Callot, that The Miseries and Misfortunes of War, that's from a similar period. That talks about the consequences of this war. And the image that's famous from that series is the hanging tree, which is an image of a tree with a lot of bodies hanging from it.
So you can actually tell that the visual expressions in the beginning of the war were more positive than at the end of the war? Is that shaped by experience?
That's what I think I'm seeing. So one of the things that I look for is how the soldiers are depicted. So they have these flamboyant hats, or they're in armor for some reason, which I can't imagine armor and bullets go together very well, but they did wear armor into battle. Towards the end, where they seem more bedraggled, maybe.
Yeah.
Or more sketchy, I guess is the actual more accurate.
Sketchy. What do you hope the audience of your artist book will learn or feel about war and its consequences, or feel in general when they look at your work?
That is so hard to answer because I haven't made it yet. So the process of making it will help clarify my own thinking. It's very similar to how writing is a kind of thinking. When you start writing an article, for example, your thinking evolves during the process of writing. My thinking will evolve in the process of making this. I know I start from a place where I hope people will join me in understanding that this nightmare of war has got to end somehow. But beyond that, I don't really know where this will go. The idea that this was the first mediated war, the first war that was extensively reported in visual media, is very interesting to me, and I'm not sure where that goes yet. One of the things I started looking at was the way the drawings of ruined buildings in the edges of some of these copperplate engravings look very similar to Matthew Brady's photographs of the ruins of Richmond during the American Civil War, and how there's a kind of historical bridge in my mind now between the ruins of big civil wars.
Right.
And in some ways, I think the 30 Years' War is a kind of civil war.
The Herzog August Bibliothek already owns 24 of your books, and I believe we're just in the process of buying even more, which I love. How do you see your new work, even though it doesn't exist yet, technically, in the context of your previous work?
The last, you know, first of all, I'm very grateful that HAB has bought my work, and that's largely through the efforts of Susanna Padberg from Vienna, who's been a great representative for my work, but also for many other artists. She's a tremendous artist book proponent, and I'm very grateful to her for that.
We are too.
But to get back to your real question, the last few books I've done have started with research or observation of archival materials. So if I think two or three books back, Cairo Poeta has a lot of material from the Library of Congress in it, particularly the Matthew Brady collection of portraits. The book I did, VOC, on the Dutch East India Company is entirely composed of images from a museum in Amsterdam, which has been remixed in a kind of hallucinogenic way. And then this book, I think, fits into that spectrum. Each book really is a body of work. I don't think of a collection of books as a body of work because I do a lot of work. It's research and thinking and testing and experimenting and a kind of thinking through printing that produces a body of work. So the books themselves don't constitute a body of work in my mind. But in this case, there's a clear thread, I think, connecting these books.
That all sounds so fascinating. I think I might just head over to the reading room and just look at all of them again.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Clifton Mehta, our wonderful guest today on Hab gehört. Thank you so much, Clifton, for sharing your fascinating project with us, and congratulations again on winning the Artist Book Prize.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to HAB for having me here. It's been great so far.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode. For more HAB content, updates, and a peek into the life at the Herzog August Bibliothek, please follow us on Instagram, Mastodon, and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in, and don't forget to join us on our next episode. I'm Marie Adler, and this was Hab gehört.